Hello and welcome to Meandering with Myrn, a potpourri of podcasts by me, veterinary ethologist Myrn Milani. Join me as I ponder any and all things animal and human, what we know and what we don't, where we've been, where we are, and where we're headed. In his book, Awakenings, neurologist Oliver Sacks described the effects of encephalitis lethargica in people. One of these is significantly delayed physical and mental responses. Sacks describes how he observed one of his patients very slowly moving his hand from his lap to his nose over a period of several hours. After the patient received treatment that restored a normal time response, Sacks asked him if he remembered what he was doing then. The patient replied that his nose itched and he lifted his hand to scratch it. The disease hadn't affected the patient's cognitive or memory skills, but rather the speed at which he experienced reality. During his pre-treatment period, he perceived his responses occurring in normal, not pathologically slow, time. Those of you who were in the zone when participating in an activity such as sports, playing a musical instrument, or even experiencing something frightening like a fall or accident may have experienced a variation of this phenomena. Even though the event occurred in a few seconds of real time, you became aware of every millisecond as it unfolded before you. Now let's do a thought experiment. Imagine an experimental apparatus shaped like an inverted Y. One arm of the Y is filled with dry dirt. At the end of the other is a plastic pipe that blocks all stimuli produced by the water flowing through it, except for its sound. If we put a thirsty but otherwise normal person at the now top of the Y, toward which arm of the Y would you expect the person to gravitate? The one filled with dry soil or the one with the water pipe? If you said toward the water pipe, what would attract the person to it? Most of us would consider that answer, the sound of the water, a no-brainer. Most of us also would agree that this constitutes a valid experiment for proving that a human is capable of hearing. Moving on, let's replace the person with a thirsty dog or cat. Now what would you expect to happen? Once again, most people would expect the animals to choose the arm of the Y with a water pipe. Now let's repeat the experiment exactly as originally conducted by researchers. This time, instead of any human or animal subjects, let's replace them with a pot of dry pea plant seedlings. What do you expect to happen? If you said that the plant roots would grow toward the water pipe, you're correct. Provided, of course, you were patient enough to stick around long enough to see this happen. But would you accept that this proved that animals could hear? If you find yourself resisting the notion that plants are capable of hearing, let alone possess at least 15 to 20 different senses that are comparable to ours plus a lot more, as well as doing things like kin recognition, decision-making, and intelligence, you're not alone. There's no shortage of scientists and those among the public who resist this notion more passionately than their predecessors resisted accepting those same attributes in animals. In the overall scheme of things, we humans often degrade the abilities of those that threaten us or to whom we want to do what we please. But what do plants have to do with Sacks' patient with encephalitis lethargica? Both possess a concept of time that superficially may seem incomprehensible, but which makes perfect sense when you recognize the reality in which they live. If you live for 100 years, like certain species of trees, remain in the same place your entire life, and are apt to have your crown or limbs snapped off by various forces, possessing a mammalian nervous system would result in a tremendous waste of energy, as well as greatly decrease your chance of survival. On the other hand, creating and implementing comparable life-sustaining survival strategies underground makes infinite sense. Instead of sending impulses at 2 to 200 mile per hour speeds via neural transmission system like animals, plants have comparable systems of electrical and chemical transmission. Moreover, plants possess some of the same neurotransmitters we do, like serotonin, glutamate, and dopamine, all of which play a significant role in human and animal behavior. However, their function in plants currently is unknown. Of course, we plant and animal lovers can't help wondering what all this might mean. In some ways, plant root systems are like neural networks in animals. It's long been known that the tips of roots can sense gravity, moisture, light, pressure, and hardness, and you can see evidence of this all around you. They can also sense volume, nitrogen, phosphorus, salt, various toxins, microbes, and chemical signals from neighboring plants. They recognize competitors and grow away from them, and alert their kin and friends to danger, just like we and other animals do in our own species-specific ways. But you can't see this unless you keep track of them over a long period of time. To bring us full circle in our human, animal, plant time traveling, I'll close with a scene described by a woman whose husband of 50 years slowly was dying of complications related to progressive Alzheimer's disease. He increasingly requested that she add more plants to the room in which he was confined because, he said, they comforted him. At first, she contributed this to his waning mental faculties, but later realized how much the plant's reality mimicked his. Both were confined to their beds or containers. Both were, to paraphrase Henry Beston's wonderful description of animals, living in a world older and more complete than ours, in which they moved finished and more complete, gifted with extensions of the senses we have lost or never attained, living by voices we shall never hear. Add the presence of a few human and animal loved ones and making that final transition surrounded by plants seems like the ideal way to go.
You've been listening to a podcast by veterinary ethologist Myrna Milani. For more podcasts, commentaries, and books about animal behavior and the human-animal bond, and links to behavior and bond sites, check out my website at www.mmilani.com. For more specific information, feel free to email me at mm@mmilani.com. All rights related to the content of these podcasts are retained by Myrna Milani. The background music, Molly on the Shore by Percy Granger, is used with permission from Katova Arts, www.katova.com.